And we're back. Frank just got cut off mid-sentence in our group, and I'm sure others in other rooms did too. We'll catch up with them in a moment. We're going to move on right now. How to thrive financially in the new normal economy. Finances is something that's been all over the board, at least in my household it is. We've saved a lot more by not going out and drinking booze. So our finances have increased. Those questions are different across the spectrum for everyone. Maybe that COVID has resulted in job loss. Now the CERB and the CEW, I don't know how you would say that other than saying CEW. They've been in the news and on the minds of many students and workers and employers. How will you navigate from the old CERB and CEW to the new programs? Joining us on the panel is Rick Valdemarca of ENY, Colleen Matichuk, Manager Financial Planning of RBC, and Frank, how do you say your last name? You're muted, Frank. I saw a lot of Italian gestures. I didn't get
I said Sacucci, but you have to move your hands like this to pronounce it effectively. Just food for thought.
It's a big matzo ball.
That's exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank. And he's the associate professor, McEwen Business School, Garrett Tuta, GM of the Fairmont Hotel McDonald. Moderating this panel session is Frank. He's an associate partner and leader of EY's public sector practice for Alberta. Rick has been immersed in the FDI trade and innovation environment in Alberta and is working with different levels of government on a number of key issues. Rick is full of knowledge, and this is his panel to handle. Rick, off to you.
Thanks very much, Brent, and welcome to everybody, and welcome to the panel, Colleen, Frank, and Garrett. Looking forward to the conversation. And so, Colleen, I'm going to start off with you. And Jeff, I think you've got a couple of slides that Colleen has sent us through. Perfect. So Colleen, you know, how do we navigate the emergency revenue benefit and the wage subsidies during COVID and post-COVID?
Yeah, thank you so much. Pleasure to be with all of you this afternoon to talk about financial security. And when I think about COVID and CERB and the government relief programs, a lot has been adjusted and changing quickly. Even though CERB is no longer, financial support is still available. So for your reference, I did summarize the government income relief programs that are now available on the screen. And some of these may apply to you today or may apply to you moving forward. So important to be aware of them. But really, no matter the source of income or cash flow that you have, financial wellness can be achieved and maintained. There are a lot of unknowns in our lives, and making sure that we're prepared for those so we can navigate them well are important. But the biggest advice I have, either it be today or in the future, is really taking the time to assess your needs versus your wants, assessing what you need today versus your future goals, and really defining what financial security means to you. Because what financial security means to me may not be the same as what's important to you. There is technology to monitor your money to make sure it's in alignment to help you achieve what's important with your life goals and your financial goals. So I'm gonna give you an example. So let's say buying a home in the future is extremely important to you. You can track your progress, not only saving for your down payment, but you can also now track your credit score to ensure that you're using credit responsibly today for those everyday purchases in preparation so that when you're ready to apply for that mortgage, you're in a financially strong position to do so. So the decisions we make today do impact our ability to achieve those future goals. But the key is to understanding what you value the most. Maybe buying a home isn't what's most important to you. Maybe you want to be more agile and live throughout Canada, or hopefully we can live throughout the world again. But aligning those values to what's important to you and how your finances can fit that is really what's important with managing day-to-day costs. Thinking ahead, letting your financial institution know what you're worried about early is important so that they can help you prepare and navigate. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, should I borrow that money? Should I cash in my savings? Which is the right solution here for me? But the earlier you start those conversations, the better they can able to guide you and get you the support that you need to achieve what you want. On the next slide is the summary of the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy for businesses. This program was really created to support business to keep employees on the payroll or bring them back to work. The war on talent risks and costs to hire and retrain employees is high, and this program was enabled to help keep businesses thrive and survive through COVID and, of course, financial support moving forward because they are so integral to our success. And we found that many small business owners are using the subsidies to adapt and to change the tasks. So we were talking earlier today about not necessarily jobs changing, but the tasks changing. And that's what we're seeing. So many times there's a situation where there's actually a time gap where productivity has been interrupted and employees have some time, which is, of course, interrupting revenue. But these employers want to keep their business running and they want to keep those employees engaged. So they're looking at creative ways to reskill and adapt these employees to the future needs of the company. We're seeing employers sponsor educational programs. And as well, we're seeing that there's an abundance of desire for employees to want to continue to thrive and support their business. So really interesting times for businesses and employees, but there are government subsidies available. And I just thought these couple of slides would help to let you know what those resources are and how we can access them. So I hope that helps to kick things off with our conversation, Rick.
It absolutely does. And Colleen, you mentioned credit scores. I bank with RBC and I'd be delighted to find out that I can check my credit score on a monthly basis. And, you know, that's really helped me make some decisions as we as a family and as I go along. So thanks for that. Garrett, going to turn to you. And, you know, you're in the hospitality space. And I think if there's one sector that's been devastated, that has to be tourism and hospitality. How are you using the options that are in front of us in the sector?
When you talk about devastated, just to share, because I always think sometimes these numbers they're big, but maybe we don't necessarily understand them fully even. But when we look at just in Canada right now, Toronto occupancy down 40%, Calgary down 34%, Edmonton down 28%. Now we did have the hockey that helped out a little bit. Vancouver down 42%. Overall, Canada down 31%. Hotel occupancy in Canada in 2019 was 78.6, and year to date right now, Canada's sitting at just over 40%. And a lot of that probably came from the beginning of the year too. So it makes it tough. Now for us in our industry, you probably heard and you would have seen a lot. So we were using ZURB for a lot of our employees just because our hotel closed. We were closed for 3 months. Other hotels were closed for a lot longer. Restaurants were closed. So to make sure that people had still income coming in, it was crucial and definitely for the economy and for people to survive, still very key. As we go forward, as we open up, our industry, especially more so in the restaurant industry, in the room side, it's a little bit better, but in the restaurant side, I mean, you typically run a 30% food cost, a 30% payroll cost, and then you probably have 10 to 15% of utilities. So you're only left with 15% at best for your margins. When you're then told you can only open your restaurant at 50%. So the best you can do is 50% if everyone was to show up on a regular basis. And we know that that's not happening. So looking at those factors, the CEWS has been essential for us in order to really to maintain and at least to be able to stay open. A lot of places with bigger banquet rooms, I mean, for us at the Hotel McDonald, we do we do on average about 150 weddings. And oddly enough, for Fairmont, we do more weddings than any other Fairmont in the world. So you got to, we would typically have had, I don't know, tens of thousands of people come through in the summer, because it'd be 200, 250 group weddings. And now they're only down to 15 at best. And now they went up to 50. So if we didn't have that extra assistance, we just couldn't operate it because it just wouldn't make sense. We are based on volumes, and again, with small margins, it has to be those volumes. So if we don't have those volumes coming in, it's going to really hurt our industry and take a lot down. And it will, even with this in there, our industry is going to be impacted greatly. Those that maybe don't have as good of deep pockets or different ownerships, or a lot of independents that have just started up, I feel for them, because I don't know how you survive. I don't know how you go forward and how you continue on. But one thing I do know is that we are creative, we are resilient, and in our industry, and we'll always find a way. Even for us, when we were closed, we had a lot of people calling and asking on Mother's Day, what can we do? Because we typically would have 1,000 people come through on Mother's Day for our brunch. And we did over 350 people for afternoon tea to go. So that's what kept us going. And we typically have about 250, 260 colleagues in the hotel. When we were closed, we were down to 13. And now we're back up to about 50 to 60. And then again, that's with the cues to help keep us going. So it's definitely essential for us to be there to keep it going. And we hope that it continues on for a bit, because we're not seeing or really expecting a rebound to our industry. Probably we're hearing 2024 is when we'll probably be back to 2019 levels. It's a long way to go to make it. So fingers crossed. But everyone, if you can keep coming out and eating for us, it's very helpful.
And I must say, Garrett, that your patio scene over the summer and the fall has been fantastic, and enjoyed hearing some of the opera singing and some of the painting that was going on, and whilst supporting the hotel.
Yeah, we're going to try and keep that patio going. It's a little cool today, but we got heaters out there and blankets, so we're going to try and keep it going as long as we can.
Well, we might as well do our piece for the oil and gas industry too.
yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you know what I'm hearing is that these benefits and subsidies, by the Canadian government and by the provincial government as well, there've been other subsidies, have been essential for you. Frank, I'm going to turn the conversation to you now, take a slightly different slant, if you like. As a professor at McCune University, how do you save for the future in these unprecedented times? I mean, what advice are you giving your students?
Yeah, good question. So about 6 months ago, I did a delivery at McCune on financial wellness as attended to the student body. My literature reviews and my research show, in order to save, you need to be motivated. What a simple word. You need motivation for almost every sort of success journey. When push comes to shove, ironically, reward and fear are two stimulants to motivation. So think about in November when we're going to have the flu vaccine. Well, what are they doing? They're giving you small doses of that virus to kick up your immune system. So how do we save? We need to be motivated. How do I get motivated? I need a small dosage of fear. Never enough fear that it takes away from the quality of life, but enough fear to keep you disciplined. And fear could be, well, if I lose this job, I better have at least 6 months worth of savings to make my rent so that I can continue on. Reward is a bigger factor than fear. Reward carries us further. If you're rewarded at work, you carry that compliment and that reward, that thought that a reporting relationship had with you for days. When you work in fear, you work isolated. And so reward, how do you get rewards? Celebrate the little milestones. If you're 25 and you just saved your first $10,000, or you're 25 and you just paid off your student loan, celebrate. Now, celebrate doesn't have to be going to Mexico with your friends, post-pandemic. but what are the celebrations? Also, you know, own your story. A lot of times young adults go through this comparison of life. Oh, I'm doing this. I have this. I went this. I have that. Nobody will challenge you on your story when you take full ownership of it. And you say, nope, it's not in my budget. I won't be proceeding with that. But thanks for the invite. I'll maybe join you in Mexico 22. And so here, the theory, though, is you have to ask for the fire. You can take all the seminars you want. You can take all these virtual conferences you want. But if you don't start your own fire, it'll die out. No, if someone else starting the fire for you, and you start the fire, you get motivated, fear and reward. And another thought, I want young adults to give this some thought. Don't get hung up on the dollar amount. I know they're hearing numbers circulate, oh, you need $1 million, oh, you need $1.5 million, oh, I'll need $1.2 million the time I'm 65. My dad told me you need $1 million. The amount is the amount. You need enough amount to give you options. When you have options, you have less stress. When you have less stress in your life, life is good. Life is always good with options, and options gives you less stress. And so what's that management amount? And as to, in fear of my time running out, I know for a lot of young adults, if commerce isn't their undergrad, they get overwhelmed with the language. You know, do I do, you know, mutual funds? Do I get a money manager? Do I do ETFs? You know, am I index fund? Am I PIC? Anytime you learn a new language, no one ever learned a new language and was fluent in a language by taking a 5-minute course. Learning the language is small steps. The reward is that you're going to be fluent in a language that is going to give you many options. And one of the two more thoughts, Eric, and I know, so I won't take up more than my time, is, and we talked about it, you know, I promised Eric I wouldn't ramble on, and I'll try to be good to my word. You know what the young adult has that I don't have? They've got time. You know what time does for you? It compounds everything. What else can it compound? It can compound your savings. So there's all sorts of adages out there, like the rule of 72, how often it takes your money to double by taking the interest rate and dividing it into 72. You can take a 25-year-old man or woman, and they can start investing small amounts consistently and regularly. And if they allow the compounding effect to take root, by the time they're 45, 50, they will should have, you know, barring no, you know, on large expenses, they should have a very strong nest egg. They will have more than the 55-year-old man or woman who says, oh, I paid off my house. I'm at the top of my pay scale. The kids have left. Oh, I better start saving. And they start putting $2,000 a month, maybe $25,000, $3,000 a month from 55 to 65. With that 55-year-old starting at that 50, at $2,000 a month will never catch up to that 25-year-old with a lesser amount who had the glory of compounding. And the icing on the cake, which is so bloody ironic, and for the young adults thinking of this, many wealth managers, I'm talking the high level wealth managers, you know, doing multi-million dollar portfolios, 10s, 20. When they were interviewed and surveyed, and Colleen, I don't know, maybe they share this at RBC, but you know something they have in common? And these are men and women that accumulated their wealth, not inherited their wealth, you know, worked their way up, were an articling student somewhere, built it up. They tithe. They gave a percentage to charity. And so then a young adult's thinking, what? You're asking me to save, but I'm supposed to give? Well, you know, I don't want to get religious on people, but most mainstream religious doctrine do encourage, you know, to give to those less needy. And then the world, you know, will return. Now, you cannot give and look up at the sky and say, well, where's my money? My portfolio's down 2%. You will be given how you need. But it's the irony of it all, that all those senior wealth managers, every one of their clients that built up their wealth have given a percentage, you know, at that 5 or 10%. And so theoretically, even if you don't believe and have a religion, Mother Nature will take care of you if you take care of hers. And so that's the little icing on the cake. You take it at what's best for you. Thank you for everyone's time.
So Frank, you know, just the power of compound interest and the power of time, really, really resonates. And Brent, Jeff, I think we're due to break into our sessions now, into our breakouts. I'm really looking forward to some of the conversations that are going to arise out of that. So thank you, panel. That was great, and we'll see you in the breakout room.